Well, let's talk about Mr. Blake Meavis. Yeah. Blake, you've got a little bit of history as well in this business, country music, going back to some classic artists that you've worked with. Tell us about that.
I guess the first success I had was George Strait.
Yeah.
And I worked at ABC Music, and a fellow by the name of Irv Woolsey worked there. He said, hey, I've got a young kid from Texas I want you to meet. So we flew down to Texas, listened to George, and George at that time was doing only Texas swing stuff. And I'm thinking, now how am I going to, you know, get him nationally known just doing Texas swing? And, of course, in Texas, you do Texas swing.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do Texas swing, you know, they don't hire you. You know,
right.
If you don't dance in Texas, you ain't on the bandstand. So anyhow, I came back and started listening to songs, and one of the songs that I sent down to him, and of course in those days, you know, we MP3 them now, but in those days you'd had to send a cassette down and wait for a response, and so I sent him down a song called Unwound, and he didn't really like it.
It ended up being his first release,
first single. He didn't like it.
Yeah,
because he was used to doing that Texas swing stuff. But fortunately, Irv said, George, you know, this is something I think you ought to cut.
Yeah.
And so he cut it. And and a little interesting side note was I was up in Indiana at my father-in-law's house over the Christmas holidays listening to some big band music. And so we started cutting the Unwound about a month later. And the fiddle players, I said, we're going to start this thing off with the fiddle. And he said, well, what do you want me to play? What do you hear? And I kind of went to dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Which on a fiddle doesn't sound, but it's actually Glenn Miller lick.
No kidding. it's the In the Mood thing.
In the Mood.
I never thought of that until you just said that. Yeah.
And I didn't think about it at the time, but, you know, later on I thought, I stole one from Glenn.
But it sounds good that way. I like that early album that he did. That was one of my favorites. Now, you know, George Strait in this business, you know, he tried a couple of times and it didn't really work out for him. And finally, I think he kind of almost given up, hadn't he? And he came back to it.
Yeah, he was doing them little clubs. You know, he's working on a ranch.
Yeah.
And I think he has a degree in agriculture, and he was a ranch foreman down there. And he had done a couple things, and they were the Texas swing stuff, and you know that does well in certain regions. But it, you know, I always say just because it sounds good in Austin, don't mean they're going to play it in Boston.
Yeah.
So you got to figure out kind of that middle road, and he, to say the least, he's done quite well.
Well, he's like one of the greatest of all time.
Him.
Yeah, I mean the guy continues to put out records today, and they're hits. What was it like working with a guy like George Strait in the studio? And did you know what you had in front of you when he's kind of breaking onto the scene?
You know, I guess because it's so early in both of our careers. If this makes any sense, he wasn't George Strait then.
Yeah.
You see,
you had
George.
No idea.
Right? Right. You know, and, he's just very quiet. And of course he still is a quiet,
I heard he was very, you know, I was reading a book when I talked to Donica yesterday. I got out a book that we have, the Country Music Number One Hits. And of course, Foolhardy Memory was his first, which you helped with, obviously. Judy Rodman was quoted in there. She was one of the backup singers, I guess, in one of these songs he did, and said he was just so shy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so is he, you know, how does a guy that's shy get up there and perform in front of thousands of people?
You know, I don't know, but, you know, George is the kind of guy when he gets up there, you know, he can lift his hand off the guitar and the crowd goes, you know, crazy. You know, other guys have to dance all over the stage, so he makes it work pretty well.
And you did some songwriting for him as well, right?
Yeah. Byron Hill and I wrote Foolhardy Memory.
Now, you have a name on there that's not Blake. It's something else. What is that?
That was a mistake.
Is that what it is?
Yes, that was a mistake. And my secretary registered it wrongly. So,
what was the reason for that? I thought it was maybe a brother, or maybe it was another name that you used.
Well, I'd rather not go into that.
So today, people really don't know that you wrote that?
Well, the industry does.
It's an AKA.
Okay.
Yeah. That really doesn't matter to me in that sense, you know. But the history behind that song was there was a movie company came to town looking for some artists. They submitted John Connolly. The label submitted John Connolly, and the place rejected it. And so I said, Irv, I said, let me have George's album and a picture, and I'm going to go get this for George. So I went down there, and a guy named Jerry Tyfer ran the publishing company that was behind this. He said, "Well, is this guy, you know, a hit?" I said, "Well, not yet, but he will be by the time this movie." So he said, "Well, let's," and I said, "I'll tell you what, I'll co-write the song with one of your writers. That way you've got part of the publishing and you'll have an interest in it." So he went along with that, and they offered George $7,500 to be in this movie. And I kind of took it on myself. I wasn't his manager. I said, "Well, if he's not worth $10,000, he's not worth anything." And so they gave him $10,000 to be in this movie. And it was a scene where he was singing in a bar, and two women were mud wrestling over here in this bar. It was the urban cowboy craze.
Yes. Yeah,
called The Soldier. And, of course, they didn't announce him as George Strait or anything. He just was in there. But it was a guaranteed single.
Yeah.
And it was 9 months after we cut it when it was going to come out. And at the end of the 9 months, I was totally convinced that I had ruined George Strait's career. This is probably the worst song I've ever written, and you can start second guess. And yeah. And unfortunately, it became his number one.
One. Yeah. What's more of a thrill for you, being able to be in there, produce a song, and put it together, or actually being able to write the song that gets recorded?
Well, I don't know. I think they're pretty equal. Yeah. You know, it's two different processes. You know, when you're recording, you know that it's going to happen. When you write, you're hoping it's going to happen. You know, you write something, and there's two ways. Sometimes you just write because you got this idea. Sometimes you write toward an artist. But I found out an interesting fact the other day that I didn't even know. But I co-wrote George Strait's first number one and co-wrote Charlie Pride's last number one. A thing called Night Games.
Mm-hmm.
So
we played all that stuff here as we used to play the country music back in the day.
Good
stuff. And is there a song that's one that you would say is the one you're most you're proudest of, or is there your favorite?
I don't know. I guess maybe Foolhard Memory stands out.
Is it that first one?
Yeah, it was my first number one as well. So, yeah. You know, in this business, I call them gifts. So, you know, you get your first demo. You write a song that somebody thinks is good enough to be demoed, and so that's exciting. You know, in my case, I got a ticket for making the illegal left-hand turn while I was going to my first demo, so I'll never forget that. You know, you get your first cut, first time you heard something you did on the radio, first gold record, first, you know, platinum record, and I've done all that, and I don't say that braggingly, I just, it's a fact. And so I figured out a few years ago that if I was going to enjoy being in the music business, I had to help other people open their gifts.